Thank you. Be seated. Court is pleased to welcome the senior students from the Vanguard School in Waco. And you will get to hear our final argument for the morning, which is Union Pump Company versus Sioux Hall Britton. The court is ready to hear argument from petitioner.
May it please the court, Mr. David B. Galtney will present argument for petitioner. Petitioner deserves 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is David Galtney. I represent Union Pump Company, the defendant that was granted summary judgment at the trial court level because the pump that was manufactured by Union Pump Company and sold to Texaco in Port Arthur was not a cause of the injuries, the knee injuries that were sustained by Sue Albright. Her injuries instead resulted when she hopped off a pipe rack at Texaco, which was between 2 and 3 feet off the ground, injuring her knees. The facts of this case is that Sue Albritton was working for Texaco. She had begun work as a trainee and was following a Mr. Subia, her trainer, around learning the job. One of the pumps that they were responsible for monitoring caught fire as they were leaving that night. Their shift. They were called back to help fight the fire. They did fight the fire. The fire was successfully put out. After the fire was out, Mr. Subia was instructed to go turn off a nitrogen purge valve. Sue Albritton asked permission to go with him, and she did so.
Was the nitrogen purge valve connected in any way to the fire or to the pump, or, was the necessity of locking in this purge valve the result of the fire that occurred at that pump?
When they got over there, they found out that they didn't need to turn it off.
My question was the necessity to block, is blocking in a purge valve something that Subio does as a regular part of his business, or was this something that they do as a part of addressing that fire that occurred at that pump?
The testimony, as best I can recall it, Your Honor, was that they heard this purge valve off in the distance, that it was an EPA purge valve, I think is the way that Mr. Subia described it, had to do with, the way I understood it, dissipating gases. But the point that I'm trying to make is that once they got over there, what happened? They had an alternate route to get there. They had two routes to get there.
Maybe I'm not communicating well. Because there was a fire at the pump, was one of the steps that Subio was required to take was to go block in this purge valve?
Yes, John. That appears to be the case, that they heard this purge valve going. They needed it turned off. That was their initial decision of his supervisor.
Right, and the purge valve was set off because there was this fire.
Apparently. There's no direct testimony on that, but apparently.
I just wasn't clear on it.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I was leading up to what occurred next, and that is that Mr. Subia's deposition was taken, and he was asked, what did you do? He said, his response was, well, I know it's a bad habit, but I turned around and I climbed over the pipe rack to get to the valve. There was an alternate route to get there that would have taken 4 to 5 minutes longer. I think he testified.
It would have been minutes?
Four minutes.
Was there a sense that it had the purge valve needed to have been turned off, that the time would have been of the essence?
His testimony was at the time they thought that, but that
would this case be different if Miss Albritton had fallen on the way to the purge valve rather than on the way back?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think it's an important distinction, which I'll get to in a minute. But I think that the crucial factor is that his testimony as to why he chose that route was out of habit, not out of a sense of getting out. They had a sense that they needed to get there, This took them 3 to 4 minutes to get there as opposed to the alternate route. But the testimony is that it was common sense not to climb over a pipe rack. It was common sense that when you're climbing over pipes 2 to 3 feet off the ground that are circular in nature, you can fall off of them. You can slip. You can do anything, any number of things. But
were the pipes covered with something that they used to fight the fire?
There is testimony, and this is at page 41, that they were wet. However, Mr. Suvia testified that he did not know, could not say, he said also that there may have been dew on it. There may have been something else on it. And he does not know what caused her to slip and fall. What occurred is that as a result of his habit of crossing this, he crossed over the pipe rack. Once they got over to the pipe rack, to the valve, they were instructed that they were not, it was not necessary to turn off the valve. Now, at that point, Your Honor, any contention that there was an...
were they waiting at this time?
They had a radio connection.
Waiting. Was there material on the floor? Was there moisture or water or foam or firefighting materials that came up over their shoe tops?
They were in hip boots. They testimony was that...
Or it came over the pipe rack into a platform area?
These were 2.5, 3 feet off the ground. There's testimony that there's water everywhere, but there's not testimony that there's water over the pipe racks. No,
I'm not talking about the pipe racks. I'm talking about after they crossed the pipe rack and were approaching the valve. Were they then walking?
Not
in firefighting materials or?
Correct.
Foam, water, whatever used?
Your Honor, I think the testimony, Ms. Lawbridge's testimony, is these pipe racks were 200 feet away from the fire scene. Now, I don't know if...
That's not my question, Counsel. The question is, after the pipe rack,
they
crossed over the pipe rack to get to the valve.
Right.
Before they got to the valve, they were advised that there was no emergency. The emergency was over, and they didn't need to close off the valve and come on back. And so they turned around and started back, and going back over the pipe rack is when she fell. Is that correct?
When she got to the last pipe.
Okay, but that she was going over, she was surmounting the pipe rack when she fell.
Walking, what she's doing.
Did she take her hip boots off, dry her feet, or anything else before she came off the pipe rack?
Let me see if I can ask. There's no evidence that there was water on the other side. If that's
between the pipe rack and the valve? There's no evidence that there was any firefighting material?
That there was material over there. But what happened is they got to the valve. They were actually at the valve itself, Your Honor, is the testimony. They made it to the valve.
Is that really relevant?
No. But the point is that when they were coming back, there was not an emergency situation at that point. Even their own expert testified that...
You had an explosion in a pump that had exploded before. It caused a fire. The fire had to be fought. That was a perceived emergency and probably was a real emergency. They thought they had an additional emergency and that this valve needed to be closed off, blocked off. They were doing their job pursuant to the follow-up to the fire. Is that correct? Explosion of fire, close the block off the valve. And they found out that part was not an emergency and they could retreat. They were in the area where the fire was being fought. They were in the area where materials were on the floor, on the ground, on the deck, whatever it was. And they were in hip boots because of all these materials, chemicals, foam, water, whatever was being used. And as they were retreating from the area, presumably with that stuff on the boots, they were surmounting this obstacle as pipe rack, and she fell. Is that the situation? Is that essentially the fact of the case?
Well,
something wrong?
The way I would, they were in their firefighting equipment. They were returning from what was no longer an emergency situation, even if you perceive that.
Didn't the Court of Appeals say if they hadn't been a perceived emergency, they wouldn't have been there at all? Is that right?
That was the Court of Appeals' interpretation of it. What Mr. Suvia said is that he chose this route out of a bad habit. He had told Ms. Albright this was a bad habit before. Not when they had asked him before. And he said he knew it was bad. He knew it was common sense not to do it, not to climb on these racks. And he had an alternate route. The point I'm trying to make is that once they got there and knew they didn't need to turn on the valve, they could have come back the alternate route. They chose to come back over the way they came back over. Again, a habit they knew that was a bad habit. And that was their motivating factor, was not some sense of, you know, emergency, but the sense that this is the way he normally does it. This is his habit, even though it's wrong.
You're saying there might have been some contributory negligence.
I'm saying that the pump was not a substantial factor in causing this jump hot from the pipe, because Ms. Albritton testified that as she was coming back, what happened is Mr. Suvio testified that when they got to the last pipe, after they got to the last pipe, that Ms. Albritton asked for help getting down because she had had a bad knee before this, and he knew it. She'd had two prior knee surgeries on her right knee, and she knew it. She testified that she was asked three times on her deposition, what made you fall, why'd you slip, what caused the fall. Her testimony, her first answer was, my guess is that I lost my balance because of the motion of walking and stopping to look where it's set.
And would your position in this case be different if she had crossed the pipe rack as part of fighting the actual fire?
I think that would be a different case, Your Honor. What happened here is that they had a route to take in returning from in a non-emergency situation, which was a safe route to take. They chose instead to, Mr. Suvio chose, and he admits it and says it, had a bad habit to choose the route they chose. Now,
so how would that be different if they were coming back from fighting the fire and the emergency was over?
Is that
a different situation?
In the Lear-Ziegler case, the court was looking at the difference between what is the philosophic cause and what is the legal cause. In that case, there was evidence that the individual stopped his truck in the lane of traffic due to a defect in a sign. But still, even under those circumstances, the court upheld the summary judgment that the defect in the sign was not a legal cause of the accident, because considering all of the facts, the court cited 431 of the restatement of second of force, considering all of the other factors involved in the accident, in that case, the defect in the sign was not a substantial factor in causing the accident. That was the analysis of this court in Lear-Ziegler, and that is the analysis that we urge here. The factors that were involved is that the fire was in fact out, that the reason they were crossing the pipe was out of bad habit, that there was an alternative path. They were on the way back, not towards the valve, so they could have taken the alternative path. She hopped off because she lost her balance due to walking, was her best understanding, although she was asked three times why. She said, frankly, she didn't know why she hopped off. She needed help getting down because of her bad right knee. Suvio testified he would probably follow that path even if there was not an emergency, and that's at page, that's in his deposition, that in all probability he would follow that same path.
The owner or occupier of the premises, was that?
Thanks, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
For the employer of Ms. Albritton?
Yes, Your Honor. She testified that she would have to hop off to get off the pipe anyway once she got towards the end of the situation. Their own expert, Mr. Green, whose testimony was quoted in part from in the Beaumont Court of Appeals decision, testified, he was asked a question. In other words, your point is, even if there was a sudden emergency, when you get over there, that emergency did not exist, and she could have come back the other way. That was the question. And his answer was right. But she climbed over there without incident. I guess she figured she could go back without incident. You know, that's at page 63, lines 4 to 10 in his deposition. But the fact is that the reason they were coming back was admittedly out of a bad habit on the part of Mr. Suvio.
Is that intervening cause or contributory negligence?
That, Your Honor, is, goes to two points. One, that it was, that the pump itself, that there were so many other factors involved in causing for actually to hop off the pipe, that the pump itself is not the legal cause, is the first thing. And then the second thing is that this is really a separate incident, a separate set of circumstances from the existence of the pump fire. We're not talking about whether or not she lubricated the pump to keep it from catching on fire. We're not talking about whether she properly monitored it. We're talking about a separate set of circumstances that occurred after the fire was out, and that when she was crossing a pipe rack that they knew was a bad habit to do, that they knew they shouldn't be walking on, that their own expert says was a non-emergency situation. I believe my time is up, Your Honor. I'll reserve
the
remainder of my time.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Mr. Tommy L. Yates will present argument for response.
Thank you. Please, the court. Mr. Garland. My name is Tommy Yates, and I represent the respondent in this case, Sue Albright. Summary judgment was rendered in this case by the trial court below upon the issue of causation. The petitioner made a claim in its motion for summary judgment that the actions of Ms. Albright constituted a new and independent cause, that the actions of a party to this lawsuit constitute a new and independent cause. I'd like to take the first part of my argument and focus on the two main cases that are cited by the petitioner in its brief. The petitioner relies heavily on this court's opinion in Lear-Sigler versus Perez, which is a 1991 opinion, and also on an El Paso Court of Appeals opinion styled Taylor versus Southwestern Bell, which is a no-writ case. Let me speak to Lear-Sigler first. Lear-Sigler involves a highway construction situation. Mr. Perez was employed by the Texas Highway Department. At the time of his death, he was driving a highway department truck, which was pulling a flashing arrow sign. Apparently, allegedly, the sign malfunctioned. Mr. Perez then stops his truck. A driver of another vehicle, which was behind Mr. Perez, apparently fell asleep at the wheel, lost control of his vehicle, and hit the sign. The sign, in turn, hit Mr. Perez and killed Mr. Perez. The survivors of Mr. Perez asserted an action against the manufacturer of the sign. It was alleged by the sign manufacturer that the actions of the driver who fell asleep constituted an intervening cause. This court found that causation was negated as a matter of law. I believe that was a correct decision. The Sue Albright case is different in that in this case, they're alleging that the actions of a party itself constitute a new and independent cause, an intervening cause. It's important to note that in Lear-Sigler, the defendant's sign manufacturer did not claim that the actions of Mr. Perez constituted an intervening cause. It was the actions of a third party. The other principal case which Union Pump Company cites is the Taylor case. In that case, the brief statement of facts was presented to the El Paso Court of Appeals. The plaintiff alleged that the defendant, Southwestern Bell, had gone out to the plant's property and laid a telephone line across his front yard and his driveway. The telephone company admits that they did not have permission or did not even seek permission to leave the line in place. The line laid in place for several days. On one particular morning, the plaintiff's wife, Mrs. Taylor, instructs her son and another boy to cut the grass. She then leaves for work. Later that afternoon, her son and this other boy mow the front yard, and in doing so, they find the telephone line. They pick it up and then hang it over a tree. Later that evening, Mrs. Taylor proceeds back home. Mr. Taylor, the plaintiff, is in the backyard. He sees that his wife is about to pull into the driveway, hit the line. So he runs forward, grabs the line, and is injured. The El Paso Court of Appeals found that causation was negated. They found that causation was negated because of the intervention of the two boys. That was an intervening cause in that particular case. Southwestern Bell did not claim that the plaintiff, Mr. Taylor, somehow caused an intervening cause, a new and independent cause. In the case before this court, it is Union Pump Company's position that the actions of the plaintiff, Sue Albright, commingled with the actions of her immediate supervisor, Mr. Soubier, constituted a new and independent cause.
Are they also arguing that the pump had nothing to do with the accident?
Justice Gonzalez, it's my understanding, if my memory sounds correct, and I've reviewed the motion for summary judgment, the issue at the trial court level, and if you look at their motion for summary judgment, it is based on new and independent cause. That was the basis that Judge Jack King rendered a summary judgment against the plaintiff.
Did the judge identify the reasons he granted summary judgment?
No, sir. As in many summary judgments, it was simply an order that was rendered that found judgment in favor of the defendant.
Would you concede that if the motion for summary judgment had had the additional ground, if this was too remotely related to be legal cause, that the outcome would be different?
No, ma'am, I wouldn't, because it's my understanding that there are definite material issues of fact that are present, that even if that wasn't their grounds for summary judgment, if their ground was that this is too remote, which, by the way, is not their ground, they're not claiming that. They're not claiming that the plaintiff's injury is too attenuated from the defendant's conduct. That wasn't the issue at the trial court level. But even if that was the issue, I believe that there are many material issues of facts that are present which would preclude a motion for summary judgment. And I'll get into the facts in a bit more detail.
If an ambulance driver is responding to an emergency situation and has an accident as a result of a party's negligence, is the person who perhaps negligently caused the emergency to which the ambulance driver was responding in the first place liable as well?
No, sir, not in my opinion, because in that scenario, you would have a true intervening cause.
And what is the difference?
Well, Your Honor, in your scenario, you've got the ambulance driver coming into contact with someone else. There's a third party. There's an outside force that enters into the picture. You're not talking about...
Well, arguably, there would be since Texaco was the owner-occupier of the premises, but for, I presume, workers' compensation insurance and the bar of workers' comp, you would have a cause of action. Ms. Albritton would have a cause of action for negligence for the slip and fall that she sustained, would she not?
Theoretically, Your Honor, but I don't think we would have pursued that. It's the pump that malfunctioned. It was the pump that was defective.
Well, if there was a dangerous condition on the premises as a result of attempts to stop the fire or whatever, and that was a condition that Texaco knew or should have known about, but failed to take care of, but for the bar of workers' compensation, she would have a cause of action against them for negligence.
Your Honor, I believe she would. We've certainly not developed the facts towards Texaco Chemical's responsibility. But theoretically, yes, you might have a cause of action against the landowner.
So wouldn't that be more like my hypothetical situation?
Well, Your Honor, in your hypothetical situation, I see a true intervening cause in the way you've explained your hypothetical to me, and that is the intervention of the third force.
Does it make any difference how much time elapsed from the fire until the time Ms. Albritton slipped and fell?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. Let me go ahead and get into the facts.
So it could be whether it's a matter of minutes or hours or days, it makes no difference?
Your Honor, no. I believe, let me back up. I believe certainly that if it's an unreasonable period of time, certainly there can be a reasonable argument made that in some time or some point in time, it's got to stop.
As a matter of law.
As a matter of law, yes, Your Honor, I believe that. But not in this case. And I want to get into the facts more to explain that. This was a very huge fire. It was a devastating fire. Texaco Chemical is a very large petrochemical plant. Ms. Albritton was in the process of leaving the plant. Her shift had concluded.
Let me ask you, she had slipped in the parking lot on the way to her car to go home. Would you still be here suing the pump manufacturer?
Your Honor, I don't know if we'd be here because that's not the grounds. That's not what the...
I'm sort of testing the limits here of what you say is a legal cause, a causal connection. Would you still be here suing if she had slipped in the parking lot on her way home from the fire?
Your Honor, I'm fighting the fire is not what caused her to slip. In this particular case, her fighting the fire is what caused her to slip. And I'd like to get into that in just a minute, because I can explain to the court how fighting the fire caused her to slip based upon the summary judgment evidence that was presented at the time of the hearing. But now I understand your point, and no, I believe that if she did slip out in the parking lot, we would need to look into what caused her to slip. But that doesn't have anything to do with fighting the fire. She was injured in fighting this fire.
How do you respond to counsel's argument that the emergency was over, she was in the way back, and she had she taken the rabbit, but for the bad habit of her supervisor, she would not have slipped?
Let me respond to that, Your Honor. I believe it's incorrect. The fire itself, the flames were there for an hour and a half. A very large section of this plant was literally covered in foam and water, not just a small area, a very large section of this plant. After the flames were extinguished, an emergency situation still existed, and that is reflected by the deposition testimony that's before this court. A hissing sound was heard, which was thought to be coming from a nitrogen bomb.
But that valve was shut off and on the way back.
No, sir. A hissing sound was heard first. Right after the flames were put out, someone heard a hissing sound involving nitrogen. It would have been an extremely horrible situation if this nitrogen line would have caught on fire. Mr. Soubier testified, well, actually it was radioed by his supervisor, hey, we have a problem. We've got a hissing sound. We think it's nitrogen. Go turn off this valve. Understanding the circumstances as those circumstances existed, you've just got to be fighting a fire for an hour and a half. You hear something that you think is nitrogen. Mr. Soubier had two options. He could walk across this pipeline, which he testified would take 3 minutes, or he could take this alternative route, which would take 10 minutes, 7 minutes longer. Under the circumstances as they existed, it would have been unreasonable for Mr. Soubier to walk around. An emergency situation still persisted.
Mr. Yates, were they not on the way back after the valve had been set off?
That is true.
So the emergency was over?
No, sir. I believe that emergency situation continued to persist. They were still securing the area. Your Honor, this is a petrochemical plant. The emergency is not over just because the flames are put out. There are still numerous, they stayed at that area for a long period of time, even after the flames were extinguished. They were cutting off various supply valves, and the deposition testimony reflects what they were doing. They were working frantically, even after the flames were extinguished. It was a very frantic situation for everyone who was involved with this fire. Defense counsel, Mr. Gauntlet, in his brief at least, says that when the flames are over, the emergency is over. That's not the case at all. Mr. Gauntlet talks about bad habit. I can see that on a normal working day, in a non-emergency setting, it probably is a bad habit to walk across an above-ground pipeline. But in an emergency scenario, at these plants, you do what you have to do to get over there to get the job done. And that's what we have here.
I suppose you'd have a cause of action against the manufacturer of the purge valve.
No, sir.
Why not?
There's nothing wrong with the purge valve. No.
It didn't need to be blocked in?
No, sir.
I guess you could sue the manufacturer of the pipe?
No, sir.
Why not?
There was nothing defective about it.
She slipped on it.
Sir, she may have slipped on it, but I think that the reason for her fall is in commingling of the foam, the water, especially footwear, the circumstances as they exist.
I guess you could sue the manufacturer of the footwear.
Your Honor, I don't see where the manufacturer of the footwear is negligent. What I see is a pump that has exploded, literally exploded, on two occasions prior to this fire in September of 1989. I see a pump that has exploded since the time of this operating engine. This is summary judgment. This pump has exploded and caught on fire on at least 4 separate occasions. I see, my opinion, I see the culprit as the defendant who effectively manufactured that pump.
Not, but you say that causation could be so tenuous that as a matter of law, it just didn't exist.
I agree.
At some point in this process, we've got to draw the line.
Yes, sir. I agree with that proposition. That is not the issue in this case. That was not the issue presented at the trial court. The issue presented at the trial court was new and independent cause.
Is there any testimony in the record as to how long Mr. Soubier stayed after she slipped?
Your Honor, I can't recall. I believe that there is testimony in the deposition.
Or that other workers were continuing to clean up and secure the area?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe there is that type of testimony. And what I'd like the court to understand, which I understand, of course, you do, is that this is a summary judgment case, that all reasonable inferences are taken in Ms. Albrecht's favor. All doubts are resolved in her favor. But when it comes to issues such as, was it an emergency situation, was it not an emergency situation, any doubts about that should be found in favor of Ms. Albrecht.
Okay, Mr. Hayes, I'd like to follow up on Ms. Gonzalez's question about the emergency being over. I understand that the significance of the events were not over. But in terms of the need to climb over the pipe rack to cut off time necessary to get to a valve is a different circumstance when that issue is over with, and now you are going to some other event, and Mr. Galtney is saying at that point 10 minutes was not of the essence. And so I guess it's the description of, it's one thing when the emergency is over there, to get from here to there, you've got to go as quick as possible, and so you climb a wall to get to there. And now that event's over with, and you look around and there's someplace else you need to go, but going over the wall is no longer a requirement. So how do you address that part? Going over the pipes is no longer a requirement in the emergency circumstance.
Your Honor, I believe that the summary judgment evidence will show to you that an emergency situation still persisted, and that they were required, when they got to the valve and were told not to block it in, that they were required to get back to where they were as quickly as possible because their job wasn't done. They still had numerous duties around the area of the fire, immediately around the area of the fire. So to take this walk 10 minutes around the pipe rack to get back would have also been unreasonable under the circumstances.
But counsel, as a matter of fact, she didn't make the choice anyway about what route, did she?
No, sir, she didn't.
She was instructed to follow her supervisor, is that right?
Yes, sir.
And he chose to go over the route.
Yes, sir, he
did. Did he choose to come, he make the choice about the route they took back?
Yes, sir, he did.
So actually, she was in a position of doing what she was supposed to do.
Yes.
And that was following the instructions of her supervisor.
She was a new employee. And she was instructed to basically just shadow her supervisor the entire time she was out there, and that's what she did.
He led her over a dangerous path.
Well, which turned out to be dangerous in hindsight, that's correct. But under the circumstances, was reasonable for him to do, understanding that an emergency situation persisted. I know my time is short.
When you have a fire or an explosion in a petroleum or a refining or a chemical facility, we have a lot of automatic shutdown systems, but you have emergency personnel, or people find themselves acting as emergency personnel, who might be ordinary employees, because those systems don't always work, because there are, I should say, defective valves, defective tubes, defective flanges, defective fittings of one sort or another, defective levers. All the systems don't always function as you would have, especially in the wake of an explosion or fire where some of that equipment may have been damaged. And that emergency situation, as you described it, does persist for a good length of time until the area is entirely secured and cleaned up.
And the evidence will show you, Your Honor, that it took literally weeks to secure this area before they turned things back on out of this particular area. It wasn't over when it was done. That's not the scenario, and that's not the summary judgment evidence in this case. One thing, I know my time is very short, and I'd like to make this point very quickly. I provided to you this morning a copy of 3.01, which is out of the Texas Patent Bureau, which gives a definition of legal independent cause. And if we look at that definition, it defines it as new and independent cause means the act or omission of a separate and independent agency not reasonably foreseeable that destroys the causal connection, and then it goes on to say some other things. By its very definition, in order to constitute a new and independent cause, which was the basis for the summary judgment, not it's just too far in time or too remote, or it's that her actions commingled with her supervisor's actions constituted a new and independent cause.
When you say commingled?
Yes, sir.
But in answer to Judge Hightower's question, you say she was following directions. Yes, sir. Their allegation is that it was permitted. This is the first sentence of their brief. This is what they said at the trial court below.
But with respect to Lear Ziegler, he was a third party.
Yes, sir. The sleeping driver was the outside force.
And Subia is, with respect to Ms. Alvarez, a third party.
No, let me address that. I don't believe so, Your Honor, because Ms. Alvarez, as been pointed out earlier by this court, could not sue Texaco Chemical. But Texaco Chemical Union Pump has an argument they can make at the time of trial. Mr. Gauntley at trial can produce evidence that Texaco Chemical, through the actions of Mr. Subiac, is at fault, that they are the sole cause of this particular accident.
Can't they claim they're a new and independent pump?
No, sir, because I don't believe they can, because in the Lear-Sigler case, the relatives of Mr. Perez, Mr. Rogers, can sue this third party who fell asleep, who hit the sign. We can't do that in our case.
And do you have any case authority that says that the new and independent cause has to be some party against whom legal recourse may be taken?
Yes, sir. And I've looked at this. There's no Texas case, by the way, that has ever said that a party's action to a lawsuit can constitute a new and independent cause. No case.
That wasn't my question.
Yes, sir. There's a case style Wick versus Riggers and Constructors, which is a 1979 Beaumont Court of Appeals decision. It's a writ refused, no reversible error case, which cites a 1949 Amarillo Court of Appeals opinion, styled Western Union Telegraph versus Hinson, H-I-N-S-O-N. These are the two cases in Texas which address this problem, and they are very, very clear. An action of a party to the lawsuit itself, that might be contributory negligence.
Never mind. I'll read it. Try to find it myself.
Well, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The question is, do you have any case law from any jurisdiction that says that an actor cannot create a new and independent cause unless that actor is liable under the prevailing jurisdiction to the plaintiff or the defendant?
No, I don't, Your Honor. But the point, they're not claiming it was just Mr. Subiac who's a third party. They're claiming that it was commingled with Ms. Aubrey, and that's through from the trial court on the board. That's their argument. Mainly Ms. Aubrey, but also her co-employee, Mr. Subiac.
Let me see if I understand in the simplest possible terms, in a nutshell, what you're arguing. And it seems to have to be it, that the defective pump, which has exploded on four separate occasions, as you said, created an emergency situation, which this injured party had to enter into to do her job. That in order to meet this emergency, or what was perceived to be an emergency, she took a dangerous route to the site. They found that immediate danger did not exist. The emergency of the hole in the wake of the exploding pump still persisted. They had to make as swift a retreat they could from, I presume, what was still considered a danger zone. And they took a dangerous route to retreat. That might be contributory negligence, has to be your argument.
Yes.
But it's not an intervening and independent intervening cause.
That's exactly right.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ken.
Now, why is this different than the argument that I think I accurately outlined the other side was making?
Your Honor, the point of my argument is that this was a separate incident, and that there's no evidence that they were proceeding in an emergency situation to return from the bow.
Did the emergency persist? Were they still on emergency alert?
There's no evidence that there were instructions to go anywhere.
That is not what I asked you. Were they still in a state of emergency? Had they secured the entire danger area?
I do not believe that they had, that the refinery was at that point completely shut down, Your Honor. I don't know that.
So I'm not asking about the entire refining facility.
Or the pumps for that matter. The fire itself was out.
this one trip that they had been instructed to take was over with. There's no evidence that they were to be rushing somewhere else to do anything else. The time period is actually 4 or 5 minutes rather than 10 minutes more, Your Honor, and that's at page 43, if it makes a difference on those two.
I don't think he said it took 10 minutes more. One was a 3 or 4 minute route, and the other was a 10 minute route, I think is what he said.
But the point is that Mr. Suvia, and it's a minor point, Your Honor, but Mr. Suvia said that it was actually 4 or 5 minutes long, the second route. So the point I'm trying to make, though, is that they knew it was the dangerous route. They could have returned back the safe route.
How is that a new and intervening cause, though? Because it wouldn't have been there, but the pump hadn't exploded and the fire hadn't occurred and the emergency hadn't.
Because the circumstances of that incident are separate from what caused the fire, and I disagree with the number of fires that there were, and I disagree with if what caused those fires.
Well, that's evidentiary, I think.
Yeah, that's not really the issue here. The issue is here, even assuming, you know, whatever they allege, that pump was not a substantial factor in this, and this incident itself was a separate incident.
Is respondent correct that your motion for summary judgment is based only on the theory of new and independent cause and not on a concept of any negligence having previously come to rest?
My motion for summary judgment was on the basis of no proximate cause or no producing cause. My recollection in looking at it is that there was emphasis on intervening cause as a theory for breaking it, but both theories break the causation.
You disagree that your summary judgment was
inadequate? Yes, Your Honor.
It was based solely on one legal theory.
Right.
Did you cite Lear's legal?
I took Lear's legal with me to the hearing, Your Honor. I recall doing that. And the Lear's legal case was cited to the Beaumont Court of Appeals. I recall personally the trial court having the Lear-Ziegler case. I don't see it cited in my motion, the point I'm trying to make is that the motion itself was trying to make the point to the court that plaintiff could not prove proximate cause or producing cause. Now that can be approached under different theories. One is, look at the product and the act of the defendant itself, and at some point, it's not a substantial factor. And I think that's what the Lear-Ziegler case did. Another way of looking at it is, this is a separate incident, a separate intervening accident, which occurred, a separate set of circumstances, which occurred involving separate facts and...
I understand. Yeah, I was just trying to figure out what you actually said.
Right. I remember taking the opinions of the court. You know, that's all I can say. Although I don't see it in the motions, but the motion is broad enough to encompass an attack on the proximate cause or producing cause elements. He asserts strict liability and negligence, and it's broad enough to encompass that element of his cause of action. And that was what I was trying to defeat, was that element of his cause of action by showing the court that this is a separate set of circumstances that we're dealing with.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the oral arguments for today. Both calls will be submitted on briefs and oral arguments, and the marshal will please adjourn the court.
The audience will please rise.